comic books, movies, TV, and more. Nerds are everywhere. It's time to assemble! It's Nerds United, a Jittery Monkey podcast. Here's your host, Greg Mahochko.
Welcome, everybody, one and all, Nerds United, episode 35. Greg Mahochko here, the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. Online, jitterymonkey.com, and Nerds United can be found iTunes and Stitcher, and specifically iTunes and the website. You can get all of the Jittery Monkey podcasts, be it My 123 Cents, A Seat Above the Stands, Popped Culture, or Gamer. So check out all of the shows along the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. And if you search iTunes for Jittery Monkey Podcasts, you'll get each new show as it's published right there in the same feed. So it's kind of the catch-all for the Jittery Monkey shows. I'm so honored to be having a special guest this time around. It seems like it's been a long time since I've sat down one-on-one or one-to-one or whatever doesn't sound weird with the guest. Probably got to go all the way back to November. But he is a Claymore Award finalist for 2014. He has a Kickstarter project on a novel that I think has some roots in that superhero genre. His hero is if it's not the... This is where my mind goes, is the protagonist. That's the word I'm looking for. Protagonist. Reminds me a lot about myself, except for the fact that the protagonist has super speed, super strength, and mullet. Plus, he also has X-ray vision, by my understanding. But welcome to Nerds United for the first time, hopefully not the last, Mr. Ross Cavins. Ross, good day to you, sir.
Good day to you. Thanks for having me, Greg Mahochko.
Wow.
It's the first time I've heard you pronounce it.
I
didn't know what to do.
I have heard worse pronunciations. I tell this to everybody that, you know, they'll see it in print, and they'll come in where I work as a car dealer, and I'm not going to worry about plugging. I don't expect the listeners to come buy a vehicle for me, but if they're in the area, they should. But people see it in print, they'll say, how do you pronounce that? I say, how do you think it's pronounced? And then I'll get some off-the-wall pronunciation. Most of them are incorrect. Once in a while, they get close. But it's the benefit of an odd last name, always as a kid, knowing when a telemarketer was calling, because they would not get it right. We'd be sitting there at the dinner table, ring, ring. My mom would answer the phone, hello. Yeah, is Mr. There? And mom's like, nope, sorry, click. Or you have the wrong number, take me off your list, click.
Yes, and usually with an Indian accent, so it was easy to pick out.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about back in the 80s. I don't know.
Well, yeah, you're right. That was before the land of outsourcing.
That's right. Let's learn. We know enough about me. My story summed up in the last 34 episodes or at least one episode. Let's find out a little bit more about you, an author, sir, and working on getting this 2014 Claymore Award finalist book published through Kickstarter. The name of the book is Barry versus the Apocalypse. We're certainly gonna learn a lot more about Barry and a lot more about the story. Let's get to know the man behind the work first. Ross, we talked here in the pregame, so to speak, but obviously as a kid, reading was something that was probably as important to you as it was to me.
Absolutely. I did have my stint with comic books, although they weren't the majority of what I read. I was a Richie Rich and Archie kind of guy. I didn't get into the superhero comics for that. I watched the movies, and back then there wasn't much, but, you know, we all watched the Batman and Robin series, and we were all Christopher Reeve fans, and reading for me, I was a Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew and Three Investigators, and I read every single one.
I remember the Hardy Boys, and then I also remember, and maybe other kids of the 80s might remember this, the Boxcar Kids. Do you remember the Boxcar Kids?
No.
Or the Boxcar Children? They were essentially, I think it was five kids, all siblings, who were... I don't want to say orphaned, but they were out on their own, emancipated, whatever you want to call it. And yeah, they kind of jumped around, I guess, via boxcar, you know, hopping, you know, riding the rails or whatever. And they would solve mysteries in whatever little town they ended up in. It was kind of fun. I remember they weren't overly elaborate books, but, you know, for an 8, 9, 10-year-old kid, they were all right.
How old are you? I'm actually being serious.
How old do I sound?
I don't know. I've never heard of the Boxcar Kids.
32.
Oh, yeah, I'm 43. Yeah, that was after my time.
Now I have to Google just to make sure I'm on the right. Boxcar Children is what it was called, Boxcar Children. And, yeah, the books themselves had the family, like, on the run, looked like, jumping into a boxcar. So, yeah, check it out. Google it. The Boxcar Children. And this is straight from Wikipedia, the most knowledgeable and accurate source online. Boxcar Children, a children's literary franchise originally created and written by American writer and first grade school teacher Gertrude Chandler Warner. So they actually exist, not a figment of my imagination, unlike most of my friends at that age.
I believe you. I believe you. I was not discounting it.
But
I just, wow. Yeah. I can't believe there was an entire series I hadn't at least heard of.
To that point, I also read the Hardy Boys. So, I mean, I'm a little bit more mainstream than people would think. So,
well, about the time you were reading that, I was into girls. So reading took a back seat.
Well,
yeah.
Okay.
They weren't into me yet, I was totally into them.
And this is a true story. I became interested in girls in first grade when I had my first kiss.
I was in kindergarten.
Now we're just getting competitive.
Now we're getting to it.
Yeah, but was your first kiss at a Catholic grade school?
No. Ugh. No, never went to a Catholic grade school.
So, all right.
Mine was in a public school, and it was first grade.
We all know what they say about those public school girls.
It was under the covers at nap time. Yes, it was.
All right. And the scales tip back in Ross's favor, ladies and gentlemen. We got to go. We're out of time.
There's more
to this story than I think we can bear.
What is this a PG-13 show?
Ish, whatever. We'll go with the flow.
Well, I'm having a beer, just so you know.
Oh, that's all right. Listeners of the show know that the last few times I, too, have been partaking in an adult beverage, but those are usually in the comfort of studio at the house, which is my iPhone and whatever comfortable sitting surface I have. But this time, being at the radio station of my previous employ, the water, the $1.50 bottle of water from the vending machine, which is considerable markup for a bottle of water.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had this conversation yesterday when I came up, stopped in, so I'm not happy. Anyway, let's get back to, I mean, you're reading Nancy Drew, Hardy Boys. What else are you reading at that time? Because you were a bit before, like, the Goosebumps, you know, R.L. Stein. And
I've heard of them, but that was way before me. Yeah, well, back then there wasn't – there wasn't too much. I was a big fan of The Wrinkle in Time. Was that I forget who wrote that right now, but A Wrinkle in Time was excellent. I read the C.S. Lewis novels, Lion, Witch, and Wardrobe. And that was about the time the really bad animated movies came out. I mean, they were awful, but back then they were great.
And you could say probably the same about Tolkien's, you know, Hobbit and Lord of the Rings animated movies were coming out.
Yep, they came out, and I actually, you know, the net being what the net is, I went and found them, and it was horrible. But back then, it was state of the art, and, you know, I lived out in the country. We had three channels and maybe four on a good night if there were no clouds. We watched what we could. There were the three networks and the one independent. And then there was the one that might show Benny Hill that you could maybe get. And that, you know, that's 11:30 on a Saturday night kind of thing, and your parents don't know you're up watching. That's okay. They don't know how to turn a computer on. They're not listening. So
they don't have the smartphones with subscribing on iTunes?
Actually, my mom's a little dangerous on the computer. She's what we affectionately call a Facebook whore. She is on the Facebook all the time. So she will actually, she'll probably listen to this. So I apologize already.
This is,
we can edit this, right?
We could. I mean, I'm probably not going to, but it's not possible.
Yeah, thank you. Yes.
My parents, I'm so thankful that they are not on Facebook or Twitter. Their online carbon footprint is minuscule, and it's beautiful.
Mm. Well, my dad, he has a Facebook account, but it's still the light blue silhouette.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. And that they, I don't think they know what Twitter is. I've never heard them talk about it, and you know, to them it's still a pound sign instead of a hashtag. So yeah, there is the divide there.
I wonder, since you mentioned the pound sign and so many of the, you know, when you call an automated service, you know, you have to hit pound or star or something like that. I'm curious as to when they're actually going to switch that over and say hit hashtag one, you know, for English or whatever. Because how many kids, they have no idea what the pound sign is or the fact that they used to play tic-tac-toe in the hashtag.
Yeah, yeah. Or what static on a television looks like.
It, not rabbit
not
ears.
Digital stuff, but I'm talking actual static. And yeah, there are so many things. We could wax and wane all day about how old we're getting and how the young ones don't understand how bad it used to be. We used to have to get up to turn the TV on, that kind of stuff, you know?
And now we're so spoiled that we just sit there and we try to mash that button on the remote if the batteries are going down.
Yes.
Rather than like get up and find new batteries.
I did last night. I took the back off and spun the battery around just to get that one last thing I needed. It worked. So, you know.
Well, I guess as long as it, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And if it is broke, spin the battery.
Yep. It works.
So, were you reading the Tolkien stuff when you were younger? Or I'm, as I said on the last episode, I'm chewing slowly my way through The Hobbit, and I just can't seem to get it done. Was that of interest? I mean, I know you said Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe and the C.S. Lewis stuff. Did you ever get into the Tolkien?
I did not. And I, when it came to fiction, it's pretty much what I just told you. There were enough Hardy Boys and the Three Investigators, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, and Nancy Drew eventually, I was never exposed to Tolkien. I actually got my first Tolkien book about 10 years ago, and it was The Hobbit. And I had read it by that point, but that was the first time I had owned one. Somebody gave it to me for Christmas, and I read it again, and I was like, man, he's good. But I must say, if it's going to be fantasy, I'm a Terry Brooks fan. Got to go there.
As
Do you know who Terry Brooks is?
I'm waiting for the explanation on that one.
Back in the late 70s, Lester Del Rey broke off from whatever publisher he was. Lester, it might be Irene Del Rey, I'm not sure, broke off and created Del Rey Publishing, their own publishing imprint. And the first author that they brought with them, that they brought in, was Terry Brooks. And he came out with the Sword of Shannara series, which incidentally right now is being turned into, I'm not sure what, who is going to carry the series, but it's being turned into a TV series right now. They are filming in New Zealand right now. Well, probably not right now. It's dark there. But then he had David Eddings came on, I believe, as the second author. The things that he's written are not widely known, but he is an excellent author. Both of them, probably 20, 30 books under their belt. They're very good. Let me just say that. Very good.
TerryBrooks.net is telling me that, the Sword of Shannara, but Terry's written more than 25 New York Times bestselling novels. I mean, to do something like that, you got to, you know, I would say that they don't let just anybody on that list, but then you've got the Stephanie Meyers and, you know, that ilk. So,
Side note, I just finished a Terry Brooks novel last night.
Okay.
It's odd that we get that, bring that up.
Which but, one was it?
Tannehill. And I cannot remember. It's prefaced. It's the middle book in a series, a three part series.
High Druid of Shannara.
Yes, there you go.
Jarka Roos, Tannehill, and then I guess next you'll move on to Strachan.
Yes. Yep.
Thank you very much, terrybrooks.net/novels.
You just made Greg Mahachihachi sound smart.
Oh, no. Well, yeah. Thanks.
It's Mahachko, right? I'm tired of butchering it.
Yeah,
butchering
Mahachko.
It. Mahachko.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I appreciate the humor in it because, believe me, when you move to a small town with a funny last name in junior high, it gets butchered malevolently and on purpose. So. With much ill intent from those mean 7th and 8th graders. I'm not bitter about it or anything. I'm just
saying. I can tell. I can tell. You've had plenty of counseling.
Oh, yes, yeah. At the bottom of a bottle, usually.
At the bottom of a bottle, yes, there you go.
So as you move on, I don't want to say mature, but progress through. I mean,
I've not matured, so you don't need to use that word.
Which brings me to a point that I was going to hold on and bring it up later, but your Kickstarter video is full of both hilarity and toilet humor, and it's so funny that even at my age that those things collide, you know, like a really bad head-on collision. But, yeah, that was brilliant and hilarious, and I thoroughly enjoyed the Kickstarter video.
I've had one friend who did not like it, and he said, "Man, you're above toilet humor. You don't need to do that." And I said, "But that's the whole point. I'm literally doing toilet humor. That's what makes it funnier to me." And when you stop and think about it, most of the stuff I write is very layered. In my opinion, the most brilliant comedy series ever written is Arrested Development, because you can watch a show and come back and watch the same episode later and see more things that happen because they've got so much happening in the foreground, in the background, in the little things the character's saying that you don't realize it means something. And then later in the series, later in the show, you realize that it was a double entendre all along. I can't remember the guy's name who wrote Mitch something who wrote it, but Herwell or something. And oh man, just an excellent, excellent show. But my stuff is layered like that. Even my toilet humor is layered in some way to mean something different than what I'm saying.
Mitchell Hurwitz.
That sounds good to me.
All right.
What did I say? Mitch Herwell. I was close.
No, I'm going with Hurwitz. Yes. I think that's what you said. I was just confirming. So,
Yeah, I'll give you that.
All right, confirmation. I haven't made my way all the way through Arrested Development, but it's one of those shows that I can sit down anytime and just watch it and just kind of relax and laugh that it's got great actors, but they're playing some great characters. Oddly enough, one of my favorite actors on that show is David Cross.
Yes. Here's what this to me, if I can actually talk, this encapsulates the show. It was canceled mid third season, and I believe it's 9 years later, the entire cast gets back together to do a fourth season for Netflix. The entire cast, and I'm talking 9, 10, 11 main characters and a whole host of supporting characters.
And that goes
entire fourth season.
And that goes to show not only was it, you know, enjoyed by the fans, but to get everybody. I mean, you get Jason Bateman and Will Arnett, who'd both gone and done, you know, gone back to Hollywood, you know, and to the big screen. You had Michael Cera, who, you know, with some of his movies, Superbad and Juno, and I mean, he at least for a while there was white hot, and they all come back. Jeffrey Tambor's, you know, always that he's always that actor that you can rely on to be entertaining regardless of the role. And I know Jessica Walter voices
on Archer.
Yes. And so they all come back. And just as important is the narration by Ron Howard. I mean, it's
yes, and Henry Winkler come back, and Portia de Rossi. I think Scott Baio was back for the fourth season for some of the episodes. I can't remember at the moment. Maybe he wasn't.
It's a testament to the writing, to the, I guess, overall vision, just to the fact that maybe they just enjoyed, you know, making this show, that they just wanted to get together and do it again.
Absolutely. I think my computer just beeped at us.
I didn't hear anything.
Maybe you didn't hear it. Oh, that's only on me then. Never mind.
Yeah. So, I mean, is that, would you say that, you know, all of your lifelong writing led to, you know, your style of writing now? Or is it just your more life experiences? I mean, I don't know how many experiences you've had with the apocalypse, like Barry will see. But, you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, there's anytime a writer writes a book, there's going to be some of themselves in the main character or one of the main supporting characters, and experiences. You can't write about something you don't know anything about. If you do, it's transparent, and people call you on it. So there's a lot of my knowledge in there that I didn't have to research. There's some things I did. But when you're writing the style that I write, I had to write, I want to say, 8 complete novels and 40 to 50 short stories before I discovered my writing voice. I tried different genres. I tried the fantasy genre. Not bad, but not good. I tried the horror / like ghost story type genre. Not quite Stephen King, but that was horrid, really bad. I've tried it's a first person, kind of a detective, but not really a detective. But not really a cozy, if you know what a cozy is. I just hadn't developed my voice when I wrote that one. Then I tried writing a love story / great American novel. It's okay, but it's not what I was wanting. And then I discovered an author by the name of Elmore Leonard. Do you know Elmore Leonard?
Enlighten me. I, of course, do, but maybe the listeners don't. So, opportunity for all of us to learn.
Yeah. Elmore is a god of writing. He died about a year and a half ago, probably 40, 50 books in print, and more than half of those, probably 2/3, turned into some type of media, film, or television throughout the years. He got to start writing dime novels in the 50s. You know, westerns, probably what he's most known for are the movies Jackie Brown, Get Shorty, the follow-up Be Cool, Out of Sight with Clooney and Lopez, and the TV show Justified, which is in its final season as we speak.
Justified is on FX, if I remember correctly.
Yes, it is. And wow. There are a lot more of his, but most of them are badly done because they don't understand Elmore. Elmore's humor is very in the background. He said in an interview one time, I forget what movie it was, but Cedric the Entertainer was cast in the movie. And he said, you know, my characters are funny because they're serious. They don't know they're morons. And they don't laugh at each other because they're serious. And that's what makes them funny to us. So there should never, ever be someone named Cedric the Entertainer in one of my movies. And it's so true. Cedric the Entertainer doesn't match. He didn't play the character right. And that's up to the director. But his characters are all like Justified. Justified, they don't laugh at each other. And the reason why that show is so wonderful is because he was an executive director or executive producer they came to him and said, we want to make this into a series, and we want you to be a part of it. And he said, finally.
Yeah.
Because nobody would ever let him be a part of those movies.
And it allows him, and we see that a lot, where authors are getting, you know, executive producer, you know, credits in film or TV. And it's a really nice way to, you know, help. And you, even in the realm of comic books, you know, it's just a nice nod to for the writer to kind of help see their vision fulfilled in a different medium.
Oh, yeah. And usually when something goes from print to video or film or whatever you want to call it, I mean, they change so many things. They've got to cut a bunch of stuff out because they've got a formula they've got to fit in. By 26 minutes, they've got to have this happening and so forth and so forth. And it never translates well. Well, if you watch the first episode of Justified, that's pretty much the story Elmore Leonard wrote for Raylan Givens. The short story, something fire. I can't remember right now. But I was amazed. I watched it and I could remember the story exactly as it happened. It was, oh yeah, they're doing this right. And especially when Timothy Oliphant was cast as Raylan, I'm like, that is exactly how I pictured Raylan. It's perfect.
And I'm a big fan of him on the big screen in what I've seen of Timothy Oliphant, and just he can do a lot of different things, and so you know his role in Justified, which is not. I'll admit I haven't watched it yet, but I'm fairly certain that it's on the Netflix. And
oh yeah, I'm pretty sure it is.
So it's definitely on the things to watch, especially. Since my wife loves to binge watch things anyway, and I'll sneak this in, you know, with whatever else that you know she's, you know, got her eye on, and we'll just we'll be watching Justified, and that's one of the things that I love about Netflix, and not changing gears, but talking Netflix. In about a month, Marvel is putting their entire first season, 10 episodes of Daredevil on. And I could see myself ripping through that in a weekend.
Wow.
Netflix is very binge-watch helpful. And it's a little dangerous sometimes, I think. But
oh, yeah, very much so. I binge-watched the fourth season of Arrested Development. I waited forever for it to come out because I knew 2 years before it was happening that it was happening. And then I was like, oh, what am I going to do till then?
I was going to, yeah. When you have 2 years for anticipation and build up and the hype, did that fourth season, I mean, did it leave you satisfied, I guess?
Oh, yeah. They did something that had never been done before. And I want to say there were 14 episodes, maybe 12. Each episode focused on one particular main character. Some main characters had two episodes, but the time frame that happened in the first episode was the exact same time frame that happened in the next episode. So what they did was they told the story, the same story, from different points of view for every episode.
Which is brilliant. And
oh, beyond brilliant.
And I'm sure that they wrapped everything up with a nice bow and said, thank you, fans. I mean,
well, I think there's a movie planned. I don't know if it's being done. I know there's a lot of talk. I can't remember what's going forth with that. But what Mitchell said of the show was, this is basically the first show that's ever been written with the premise of being binge watched.
So they came up with that before binge watching was a thing.
Well, I think it was in response. This is how we watch TV now. So why not write a show that you could not have written before now?
I understand.
Because if you stretch out that same time frame over, you know, 4 months of TV shows, you're going to forget how funny the first one was and what that character was doing. And he's in the background of this episode, and you see him back there, and you're like, oh, I remember when he was doing that. Well, if you do it in a weekend or a week, you binge watch, you remember that episode. So it wasn't possible before. But now It is. And they released all the episodes at the same time on the same day. And it basically said, if you can watch them in any order you want, it doesn't matter. You will see it differently. You will still get the same thing out of it, but you'll see it differently. You'll empathize with one character more than another if you watch them first. Oh, it's interesting. You should just, everybody should Google that.
And then start on episode 7 and go to 14 yeah. and then watch 1 through 6 or whatever.
All the even and then the odd.
Oh, there you go. 1, 2, skip a few, 99, 100. But we're going to get back
yes.
to you. And it's so easy, which is great. I love getting off topic because I jump on tangents all the time. But Nerds United 35 is Ross Cavins. And while we're talking about the Arrested Development and how everything in that last season is connected, we got to talk about Follow the Money, because that is your
good segue.
You like that?
Yeah,
segues, that was ladies impressive. And gentlemen, not just the two-wheeled vehicle for transportation. It is Follow the Money. It was an award winner back in 2011, I believe.
I want to say it was 10.
Okay.
Yep, 2010.
I'm just looking
at you're close enough.
Well, on the website, it says Reader Views or Reviewer's Choice Award.
Oh, it was
Choice
the
Award,
2011 Reader Views, but it was a Reviewer's Choice, but it was it came out in 2010.
Okay.
So,
Follow the Money. It's tell me a little bit of it's stories that interconnect, but obviously are different stories. So tell me about Follow the Money.
Well, that's a great segue from Arrested Development, because that's exactly why I did it, because Arrested Development blew me away. Each of the stories can stand on their own as a short story, but each one has characters from the other stories in the book. And it's one of those I recommend reading from beginning to end, but you could start in the middle and
2, 4, 6
to the end and start at the beginning. And, you know, you can start anywhere, but I actually wrote story 3 first and then went back and wrote the other two stories to match up. But certain characters will show up in previous stories and then later stories. And then they're the main character in one story and et cetera. And you don't realize it because they're in the background. I don't draw attention to them. But in the story that they are the main character, something may be mentioned and you go, wait. And I've got some character. It's not obvious on some. And I've talked to people who have read it and said, did you realize that this person was the person in that story? And they didn't. And I was like, good, because I didn't want to slap you in the head with it. But it's one of those, if you read it more than once, you will get different things from it, because it's layered. It's very layered, very interconnected. A lot of rewriting to make that happen.
Which brings me to my next question is, you say you started on story 3 and then went back to 1 and 2. How much preparation did you do ahead of time to get all the pieces to fit in place to where it is not so obvious yet interconnecting and kind of feel like one big tale that's told over, you know, 10 or 15 much smaller tales?
Actually, with this story, not very much. And a lot of people call it a novel because it reads like a novel, like there's chapters rather than separate stories. And the main character in the book is a briefcase of money. And the whole premise is what happens to this briefcase of money as it changes hands, why it changes hands, how people use the money for nefarious reasons or good reasons or for whatever they think is good reasons. I was inspired after reading Elmore Leonard. When I read Be Cool was my first Elmore Leonard book, which is the sequel to Get Shorty. And I read it first because it was the first one I got my hands on, and I had always been told to read Elmore. And so finally I found one, and I thought, okay, I'm going to read it. By the first page, I was hooked. And his style spoke to me. It was very gritty. It was very edgy. It was very minimalist. Minimalist meaning it doesn't take me 3 pages to enter a room. For Elmore, he entered the damn room, and that's it. There's not a lot of description and detail. He tells you just enough to you know what's going on, and you know who that character is. Like with Raylan Givens, Raylan Givens is a modern-day cowboy. He wears a hat, he holsters his gun, and he draws on people. He's a cowboy, but he's in modern times. Mm-hmm. Well, because that's not my background, I've got rednecks. A lot of rednecks. A lot of rednecks in my books.
Now, do we want to say right now what part of the world you hail from, or should we just leave that to the listeners?
Well, now I'm wondering if people can guess by my accent, which is not going to be very easy because I quashed it mostly.
I was going to say I don't pick up an accent from you per se.
No, it's there when I drink. So if this went on for a couple more beers, it would come out. But I'm from North Carolina.
All right,
not necessarily rural North Carolina, but we were 30 minutes from the closest town, so to speak, growing up. And a trip to town was a trip to town, so to speak. Didn't get to town much. Friday nights to do, we got home in time to watch Dukes of Hazzard. That I remember. So, and that tells you enough right there. Dukes of Hazzard was in my background.
Similarly, my background consisted of Walker, Texas Ranger.
So. Oh, God, I'm so sorry for you.
It's why I want a Ram truck. Are you kidding me? Come on now. Now I sell them, so hopefully I get a good deal.
Oh, God. Oh, one of the worst made shows of all time. I'm sorry. I just shed a tear for you. But
Chuck Norris, behind his beard, he has another fist. This is getting out of hand.
It's really devolving. But Follow the Money was all about the interconnection of these different types of characters. And my goal was to write for the everyman, for the layman. I've got a $3 vocabulary, but I don't like to use it in my writing because I don't want somebody to have to stop and look up a word when they're reading me. I want them in the story. I want them sucked in, and I don't want to let them go. I want them to hate to put the book down, but they have to because they've got to do something in their life. Mm-hmm. And one of those pretentious writers who adds these big words to prove they know them, I abhor that. I hate it. And I can use a $3 vocabulary when I'm talking, but not when I write. No, I hate that. So subsequently, my characters are all just normal people. They're nothing extraordinary. I also don't have white hats and black hats. All my characters are gray. The good ones are gray. The bad ones are gray.
Hmm.
They all think they're doing the right thing. And if you ever read on how to build a villain, all villains believe they are doing the right thing for their reasons. They never think they're evil.
Some of the, kind of keeping that comic book tie in, some of the best villains that are out there. I mean, look at Lex Luthor. You know,
yes.
He's essentially Superman's arch nemesis, and he's just, thinks that he's trying to protect the world from this alien threat. I mean, Joker's a bit of a different story because he's a psychopath, but there's so many villains out there who, you're absolutely right, they think that they're the good guy in the story, which I think for, comic book editors and publishers makes it more difficult for one of those characters to have a standalone series because I think then you're always going to have the people who like and appreciate the Joker because it's the Joker and he's, whimsical but dangerous and Green Goblin or whomever. But at the same time, I think that purely opinion and treated as such, but I think the publishers don't want you to empathize too much with the villain because then that might take away of your appreciation of the hero.
Yeah, I don't know what's in publishers' minds.
Fair enough.
I like to keep the waters muddy because you don't know what's going to happen. And I want you half the time pulling for the villain, and then you figure out, wait, I'm pulling for the wrong guy. Why am I doing that? Mm-hmm. I want to have done that to you. Now, at all times, you know who the protagonist is. You know who the antagonist is. But I want you to empathize with both and see they've both got a goal. They're both doing things for their own reasons, because that's real life. Everybody thinks they're the good guy. Everybody. And we all have our nemesis, and they think they're the good guy too. So, there are no Clark Kents in this world. There's nobody like that. A true Clark Kent is boring, not fun. So my characters have a little bit of attitude with them, a little bit of grittiness. Now, and I will say this, I will preface, Follow the Money has a fair share of F-bombs because those characters would not say darn it and dag nabbit. They are rednecks, so they say what they say. However, Barry versus the Apocalypse is more PG-13. There may be one or two F-bombs, but they're strategically placed and they have the effect that they have when they come out. And that was on purpose so that it would have a broader appeal to a more general audience.
When did you start kind of getting the itch or the bug to do some creative writing and try to, have you been writing since you were, little and just kind of stashing it away in notebooks, or was it, did something that you kind of grew into after reading and saying, I've got thoughts, I've got my own perspective and my own view of the way be it my situation or life or a particular circumstance. Was it something that you've been doing for a really long time, or did you kind of grow into it here in the latter half of your 42-3 years?
You could say age. Take offense.
Well, that's fine.
I've written a little bit here and there, but honestly, I hated English in high school. It's my worst subject. I got kicked out of honors English. I did not like it. And when I got to college, it was a different story altogether. English was looked at in a different light. In high school, you were penalized for being creative. You had to do the things just like they said. And for me, I was like, well, that doesn't make sense because there's so many ways to do it. So I excelled at math in high school and subsequently went on. My degree is computer science. Math, to me, 1 + 1 is going to be 2 whether you like it or not. And you can't argue with that.
I don't know. With Common Core, it might end up being 5 and then you take Common away 3
Core,
apples.
That's a whole other episode. And when you get to that, you call me. We'll talk.
I really don't want to get to that, actually. I like laughing and having fun at my shows. And I don't want to cry. So we'll just – I never said yes. Common Core. I'm not going to edit it out, but ha ha ha. But you're absolutely right. There's in preliminary school and high school, there's a structure –
and an emphasis on conformity.
Yeah, and you get to college, and you're allowed to, I don't want to say explore, but you find out a lot more about yourself. And I'm not just talking the freshman 15 or anything like that. I was really fortunate, and I just went to a small community college, but we had, I think it was sophomore year. It was 2-year JUCO type thing, and sophomore year I took an English literature course, and the instructor was really cool. We were reading John Milton's Paradise Lost, and of course we also read, we read so much. We read about the travels of Gulliver in that class. I mean, just some of those classic English stories. And we had to take a character from Paradise Lost and analyze it in report form, and hand it in as a paper. And I said to him, when the day he handed us the assignment or gave us the assignment, I said after class, I said, can I do a little bit more of a creative approach with this? He said, well, what did you have in mind? And I said, the character that I want to focus on would be Lucifer. But I want to write it more as, instead of a report like, Lucifer was portrayed as this, and this is the problem that he had with humanity. I want to make it a letter from Satan or from Lucifer to humanity.
Awesome.
And he said, yeah. He said, be careful, but okay. And so in doing so, not only did I pull from the book, but I also used quotes from The Devil's Advocate when Al Pacino's given his big soliloquy about God, and I pulled from, of all things, Dogma, because I was, you know, that was, I don't want to say that was the height of my Kevin Smith appreciation, but that was when I was watching his movies the most, was in college, and Dogma had come out just a few years ago, so it was that scene where they're in, I guess, the parking garage, Bartleby and Loki, and Bartleby's doing his rant, and so I pulled some lines from that, and I tied it all in, and I got like 100, and I was so excited, and he said, well done, and, you know, you stretched the boundaries, but you didn't, you know, blow them up with TNT, and so, yeah, I couldn't do that in high school.
No.
That's what I'm saying, but, you know, college, and this is, you know, even, you know, rural America, you know, probably similar to North Carolina, it's relatively conservative, and mm-hmm. even in Illinois, which is a blue state, oddly enough. And but he let me branch out and kind of, you know, test myself on that. So that's something that I really appreciated for my time in the community college or in academia. So, yeah, high school, even today, I'm 32. I've been out of high school for almost 13 years. No, wait, 15 years. I probably need to go back, apparently. I high school is not something that I miss.
You need some Common Core math.
Oh, see, if I've been out of school, no, please don't. Anyway, graduated in 2000. So yeah, coming up on my 15th reunion, which I won't go to. So college for me, far more positive of an experience all around than high school. And hopefully that's, I know high school kids now from working in radio and mostly doing high school sports, things like that. And I said, if you guys think that high school is the best time of your life, you have no idea. I said, but at the same time, I said, don't be in too big of a rush to grow up, because at some point responsibility is going to kick you in the teeth and you're going to have bills and insurance that you have to pay for. I said, you know, ride out the comfort zone while you can, kids, but also realize that high school is not the highlight of your life, or at least it shouldn't be.
Yeah, and we know those who it is. So that's just sad, but we all do. I've written about them. So,
and would you say you wrote about them in Barry versus the Apocalypse, or would you say
that would be Follow the Money?
I was going to say Follow the Money. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The characters in Barry are a lot more mainstream, so to speak. And they're cliche, but not cliche. His best friend / sidekick has been his best friend forever. And the best way to describe him is an accountant looking guy.
Not so, Barry, obviously, but his buddy.
Say again?
Not Barry. Barry does not look like the accountant.
No. Yeah. Barry is about 6'4", 310, beer gut and mullet.
Yeah,
and
see.
Very strong, though. I mean, because he is a superhero.
And the artwork, we need to highlight this, because it's without the artwork that, you know, if you didn't get this guy to do your art, we wouldn't be having this conversation, because that's, he's a mutual friend of ours. You'd have to go back, listeners, to episode 9. That's
my, I think it's 12.
Name. Okay, episode 12.
I did my research.
Thanks, Ross. I'm glad one of us did. Joe Dodd did the cover art for Barry versus the Apocalypse, and did just a tremendous job, as you know, my listeners know from episode 12, allegedly, and of course all the monkey art that you see on jitterymonkey.com. But not only that, but it's easier, I think, when you can create a character from scratch. But this is something I noticed right away in looking at Barry, is that he looks like one of these celebrities that we have, you know, in movie and television right now. The actor's name is Danny McBride or Kenny Powers, and really resembles that particular individual. Was that, I take it that was by design? Was that based on Barry's personality, or was it a a picture in your mind forming before you started plotting things out?
Yeah, I've written about this on the website, and I'll go into it now. I saw one season of Eastbound and Down, and the Kenny Powers character that Danny McBride plays, of course, is similar to the characters that he's played in other movies. What was it? The Apocalypse?
This is the End?
No, it was the Ben Stiller flick. I can't remember right now. Something Apocalypse or whatever. You know what? Maybe it wasn't Apocalypse. Anyway, the Chicken Foot Way, I think it was the first time I had seen him. And from what I understand, that was a locally shot in Charlotte, North Carolina. And if you look on IMDb, I think it's his second credit.
The Foot Fist Way?
The what?
The Foot Fist Way?
That's it. What did I say? Chicken foot?
Yeah. I was like, I'm looking for chicken. I don't see chicken.
The Foot Fist Way, yes. If you watch that movie, that's his character. He created that character way back then with the mullet and the attitude and the uncomfortable, awkward pauses and the ad-libbing. And, I mean, you look at Kenny Powers and you're like, yeah, that's Kenny Powers. They did a good job. No, that's Danny McBride. That's his character he created, that he made his own. If you go back to the Foot Fist Way, find a way to get it. I would say go to Blockbuster, but they don't exist anymore. I don't know how you'll get it, but wow. It's not the greatest movie, but if you're a Danny McBride fan, this is like the genesis of that character. And I've seen an interview one time where he's like, I don't like mullets. he's like, I don't normally have a mullet, but now everybody wants me to have the mullet. So for the physical appearance of Barry, that was my inspiration, was Kenny Powers, because it's that the opposite of a superhero look. Obviously, you know, being 6'4 and 3'10, a bigger guy than Kenny Powers. But a little bit of the attitude, too, because the Kenny Powers character thought he was all that in a bag of chips, and he wasn't, and we knew it, but he didn't. And that was part of the fun of the series. Now, I've only seen the first season, so I'm not sure what happens in the others, but that first one, that's what I got from it, and that was the part of the fun for me, was that he was a moron, and he didn't know it, and everybody else did. Here's this guy who peaked before he got to the major leagues, thought he was the best pitcher in the world, and slowly slid down the hill, made excuses up in his mind of why it was happening. And when he finally got let go and now he's a gym teacher, he still thinks he's going to get his shot and be back where he belongs in the majors. So that's sort of Barry. Barry thinks he's all that in a bag of chips. He's not really. But you can't tell him that because he's a superhero. He's got powers. What can you do? Open a bag of chips? So he's got that attitude. And the other character that he's based on is Gregory House, MD. And where that comes from, I didn't watch House for 4 or 5 seasons. Because when I would see the promos, I thought, what a dumb idea. You got this whole series based on this complete dick. Who wants to watch that? So right. I never watched it. And then it just kept being popular and popular and winning awards and stuff. And I was like, man, maybe there's something to this. So I watched an episode and I was hooked. It said something to me that here's a show where the protagonist is not a likable character, but we like him. Why? What is the lure? Why do people love this House character when he's an ass? So I watched House trying to deconstruct the character to figure out why am I drawn to this guy? He's doing everything wrong. Everything as a writer that we're not supposed to do with a protagonist. And he's doing it. And I still want more of him. So Barry's an ass, a complete ass. He's a chauvinist pig. But he's not too chauvinist because his best friend and sidekick is bisexual. Now, Barry ribs him about it, but Barry's best friends with him. It's not like he's, you know, this homophobe or anything. He's cool with that. He's just a chauvinist. Mm-hmm. he ribs, you know, it's not a major part of the series, but he'll give Gordon a few shots every once in a while about his personality and stuff. Gordon is his best friend superhero, Gordy, as I refer to him in the book. The book is written in first person, so it's like I get to be Barry and say all these wrong things. And for me, that's one of the lures of Barry and House. One of the things we loved about House is that he would say things that we wished we could say, but it's not politically correct.
And he did so unapologetically.
Oh, he did it. He called attention to it. He made sure you knew he was saying it, and then he would repeat it. And then he would wait for your reaction.
Then he'd Barry's say it again.
That same way. So yeah.
it's Barry versus the Apocalypse. Now, is it the standard Apocalypse, sky is falling, world is coming to an end, or is it a metaphor for something else, or is that just information that you cannot divulge in an interview and say you're going to have to support the Kickstarter, buy the book, and go from there?
No, I'll tell you enough. In the promo stuff that I've written, it's Barry gets sucked into this. He's retired. Okay, he's been retired for 20 years, and part of the reason he's retired comes out in the book through flashbacks, and you kind of learn his origin story. See, Nerds United.
Uh-huh.
You learn his origin story through the flashbacks and through some of the remarks he says. But you learn in the first chapter, he's retired. He doesn't want to do that crap anymore. He doesn't care. And part of the reason why is he got the world turned against him. So you learn through the flashbacks how that happened, what he went through, and then you start to empathize with him. At first, you're like, he's a dick, and he's still a dick later, but at least you understand him a little bit better. But he – I'm trying to figure out the best way to say this without giving anything away. He gets sucked into – returning back to the superhero business because his best friend's twin sister works for Homeland Security, because we always got to have a way to funnel the cases to him. Her partner disappears, and it's not been long enough for the agency to do anything. Now, have I researched that's the way that happens? No, I don't care. it's fiction, and I don't care what they really do.
Because we all know that Homeland Security, if one of their agents goes missing, they're on it like that.
Yes, there's no bureaucracy whatsoever.
If you or I go missing, it's going to be a few days.
Well, supposedly he was undercover, so they're not sure he's missing, but she's sure. She's also his lover, which comes out later. But that comes out soon. That's several chapters in. It's not, I'm not giving anything away. But Barry's got a thing for her. So, and that's obvious. Second chapter, so I'm not giving anything away there either. But he gets sucked into that, and it turns out to be more than just a kidnapping. The kidnapping was because that guy had gotten too close to what was happening. And so the story develops and unfolds as Barry and his crew figure out what is happening, which is a modern-day apocalypse. The dastardly villain is trying to collapse the world's economy for his own reasons that I won't give away.
Thank you.
And that will cause the apocalypse. So it's Barry versus the Apocalypse.
You are, or not are, have started a Kickstarter campaign, and I encourage anyone, you can access it just by going to Kickstarter.com and searching for Barry versus the Apocalypse. You can also go to RossCavins.com and see the post there about the Barry versus the Apocalypse Kickstarter campaign. Why did you opt for Kickstarter versus the traditional publishing route?
I tried to go the traditional publishing route before. for 4 years. Like, I had Follow the Money. I self-pubbed back in 2010 just to get something out there because I wanted something out there, and I tried to market it to agents then. Found an agent that loved it, and he said, well, you've already published? I'm like, well, I just self-published. I've not even told anybody about it. I just wanted to hold it in my hand. It's so cool. And, you know, the way the digital age has gone, now we can do that. And, you know, 20 years ago, that unheard of. And he said, well, it's a dead project now. I said, but I haven't even advertised. I haven't told nobody. Nobody's bought it. Trust me. And he said, it's too late. He said, for you to get that to traditional publishing, you would have to sell 5,000 to 10,000 copies in the first 6 months. And I said, okay. My major was math, computer science. If I could sell 5,000 to 10,000 copies in the first 6 months, I wouldn't need a publisher. He said, I didn't write the rules. That's just the way it works. And I said, well, they're stupid rules. So I kind of got disgusted with the whole publishing process and did my own thing and had some life stuff go on. And then I started getting back to it, and I was writing the whole time. And I thought, well, you know what? I'll turn the first story in Follow the Money into a novel, and I'll keep Follow the Money for myself. So when the novel goes good, I've still got my property that I own over here, and I'll be happy. So it worked on that novel, and it's a completed novel. It's polished. Went to a writer's conference, Killer Nashville, in Nashville, and immediately got an agent. Read the first two pages in an author roundtable, and the amazing thing happened. After everybody got up from the author's roundtable and left to go to their next class, the agent came over to me, grabbed me by my elbow, leaned in, and said, send me this project. And I about passed out. So,
in a good way,
that's what
in
you dream is going to happen. But it, you know, it doesn't. You were saying something? What?
I was just going to say, passed out in a good way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Not a low blood sugar thing.
No. Or too much alcohol.
Yeah, but, that's true.
That was later that night. But
I bet. Got to watch out for conferences, man. That's one thing I know.
Oh, yeah. Everything happens in the bar. There's the secret.
It's what out. Happens at the conference stays at the conference. Yeah. But herpes well, till you lasts forever. Right.
So, so I went with that agent, but it ended up not being the best choice. We worked on the book a little bit and got it out. Four publishers, I believe, asked for full manuscripts, which was awesome. But now at this point, we're 8-9 months later. It just takes forever in this business. And we never heard anything back from them, and I became a little unhappy. The fact that I wasn't too happy was my indication that I should be happy, and I ended up signing with another agent who I found out wanted to sign me the year before. So I was like, cool, two agents wanted to sign me, and that's, I mean, for when you're just getting into the business, it takes forever to get one agent, but I had two just like that. And so I'm like, cool. We went, we worked on that book. We changed some things around that were problems. We did some other things. A year later, her agency turns the book down, which to me is unheard of. Once I deal with an agent, that agent's working on full commission. Their whole thing is to submit to publishers and let the publishers turn them down. But the agency turned it down, and the other book I was working on, Barry versus the Apocalypse, they turned it down outright without even considering it because they said, quote, a middle-aged superhero with a beer gut will not sell. And I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. That's hilarious. It's like the antithesis of a superhero.
I was going to say, it breaks the norm. It's something yes. different, but still close enough that, you know, might intrigue or draw in some of those, you know, cape and cowl fans type of things. I mean, premise alone is solid, you know, for me, but for them just to, you know, say, nah, sorry, without looking at it, it is astounding.
Oh, and I got to say, at this point, I'm a finalist in the competition. They turn it – this is a national, international competition. I'm a top 10 finalist, and it's a mystery competition. I'm a humor novel. But it is mystery. It's wrapped in mystery, but it's predominantly a humor novel. You will not turn a page without there being some snarky comment, something. So here it is. It gets flat out turned down, and then my agent is apologetic. And she's like, you know, I'll understand if you want to part ways because, this is what you do. They tried to get me to write something different because they loved my writing voice. They loved what I was doing. And they loved the fact that I could write. But I'm like, you know what? This is what I write. This is what and I'm excited about Barry. Everybody I've given it to beta read loves Barry. I can't believe you guys won't even take a look. And what that actually said to me was, we don't know how to sell you. We don't know how to sell this. We don't have the contacts to do this. But we know we can make some money off of you, so why don't you write this? And I'm like, you know what? Now we're talking another 2 years out, and I took some time. I thought about it. I asked friends. I asked other fellow writers. And I decided, no, not right now. I'm still considering shopping my other book around, which is more Elmore Leonard flavored, like Follow the Money. That I think will not have any problem getting traditionally published, especially with Elmore being so popular in the writing world. But Barry, I thought, was special. And I thought, you know what? If you don't know how to sell it, I'll sell it because I don't think that's going to be a problem. It's a hilarious, it's a great character. I spent a lot of time building the character before I decided what I was going to put the character in. And then it's just a very snarky, campy kind of feel to the book because he makes fun of Superman. He makes fun of other superheroes because to him they're real. In his fictional world, he's like, that wouldn't work. You get a freaking ring from an alien and all of a sudden you're a superhero? No.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Time out.
That's Barry. He's a dick.
you can't, maybe we didn't go about this, you know, in the green room well enough, but Green Lantern is my guy.
Oh, really?
I've got the Green Lantern tattoo.
Oh. Well, he pokes it. He pokes at Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, okay. That's all right.
He makes fun of other superheroes. Then as his origin story, because I'll say this, Barry doesn't know his true origin story. And that's part of the book, is him finding out where he came from. So as he learns his origin story, then his outlook kind of changes toward the other superheroes. That's all I'll say for that. It's I don't want to give anything away there.
Barry versus the Apocalypse.
Yes.
Look for it on Kickstarter. You're only a few days into the Kickstarter campaign, and so far doing pretty well. Still have at the time that this will publish, we'll post the middle part of this upcoming week or today if you're listening to it. They published today for the very first time. Still got about 3 weeks to go, and not to brag, but on an early episode of Nerds United, we had the gang from the original comic titled Ginormous on, and they were in the last days of their own Kickstarter campaign, needed a push, got them over the hump, and I'm anticipating any day now my bundle of goodies from Ginormous. So go to Kickstarter, sweet. Folks, kickstarter.com, and search for Barry versus the Apocalypse, which, by the way, was a 2014 top 10 finalist in the Claymore Award.
Yes.
What can you tell me about the Claymore Award? Because I didn't know much about it before doing my research, and there's probably a lot of listeners out there who are unfamiliar with the Claymore Award.
It's attached to the Killer Nashville Writers Conference, which is mainly for mystery writers, thriller, suspense, that kind of thing.
some of the people like Jeffrey Deaver headlined one year. We've had Peter Straub there, different kinds of writers like that. Just all kinds of mystery, suspense, and thriller. And I've been 3 years, I think 3 years, 2 or 3 years. And it's a blast. And they've had the contest for years. And it's for best unpublished novel. And I thought, actually, I submitted my other work, which I haven't named, but I submitted my other work. And with a week to go, I thought, I wonder if I can get Barry ready. It was in first draft form. And you submit the first 50 pages. And I thought, with a week to go, let's see what I can do. So I worked on it a little bit, submitted it. And that was the one that made waves. So interesting.
Very, very excited for Barry. And, less excited for the apocalypse, but excited for the overall story, Barry versus the apocalypse. Looks like it's going to be just a terrific, fun novel to be read by, again, my guest on episode 35, Mr. Ross Cavins, and artwork by, or cover art, I should say, by Joe Dodd. One of the things when we're, you know, hashing out the terms and conditions of this conversation, you have a radio background as well.
A minor radio background. I did a specialty show in college for a year.
Well,
very minor.
My college did not have radio, so I had to jump straight, you know, headlong into the paid radio universe, and I spent 10 and a half years there. But and anybody who's been listening to our conversation knows that by now you got just a killer radio voice, and and you challenged me to an announce off. I don't know exactly how it got brought up, but you, sir, challenged me to an announce off. And although having visited with you now for close to an hour and a half, I feel like I'm going to lose, but we have some phrases, some vintage announcer phrases, but just for kicks and grins and probably to piss off some of the elitists who prefer their English literature untarnished by American voices. We've got some Shakespeare we're going to do in our announcer voice, and even some Robert Frost as well. So, how would you like to proceed? Do we want to read each one of the announcer things in our best announcer voice? You take a Shakespeare, I take a Shakespeare, and then we'll alternate stanzas of Robert Frost?
That's, I don't know. I've been thinking about that, and I don't know how I would attack it.
Let's hear your very best promo, not promo, but at least the day, which, as we're recording this, is tomorrow, but the Monster Truck Rally's coming to town Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
Okay. And there's no no editing in here.
No editing.
And I'm out of beer. I just want to point that out.
You know what? I'm almost out of water. I've been rationing it as best I can.
I killed mine. Yep, it's out. Okay. Sunday, Sunday, Sunday. But I don't have any other text to say. We'll sell you the whole seat, but you're only going to use the edge of it.
And then I'll follow up, and we'll try to keep this as normal as we can. We'll sell you the whole seat, but you're only going to use the edge of it. So that's that. That's my take. And
yes.
The weather, the 11 p.m. weather from Mr. Ross Cavins.
It's 16 at the airport and 17 downtown, and that's the 11 p.m. weather.
Is it sad that even I'm sitting in a studio by myself with headphones, and yet I put that right hand up to the ear?
Nice, nice.
It's 16 at the airport and 17 downtown, and that's the 11 o'clock weather. Back to you, Stan.
You cheated. You gave me 11 p.m. 11 o'clock sounds better.
Hey, I you know.
No, we could ad-lib.
Oh, yeah, you can ad-lib a little bit. Now, for here's where we have the opportunity to, like I said, piss off the traditionalists. Do you want Hamlet or do you want Romeo? that part.
Oh, that's right. Those are two separate. I'm looking at them now. And I think your listeners should know, I do voiceovers.
Uh-huh.
I haven't gotten paid much to do them because it's a very difficult business to break into.
That's for sure.
But I do them book trailers and stuff on the side, try to get paid. I beg. But, yeah, I do. I have done more than the radio show 20 years ago. So, and I do talk in the shower a lot. That's
fair enough.
Probably not good to mention.
Now so. the key with the key with these Shakespeare bits is you're not reading it as a classic thespian. You've right. got to read it in your announcer voice.
Okay, and I've not practiced any of this because I literally just got the text before we started. So I will do my best.
All right, and you go first, and whichever one you don't do, I'll do that one and. I'm ready.
I'm gonna do to be.
Okay.
To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take the arms against a sea of I sound a little too much like Star Trek dude. What the hell? Why am I doing
Spock?
I do impersonations? No, I sound like Shatner.
Oh.
I felt like Shatner there, and that's not good.
That's not logical, that's for sure.
No.
See what I did there?
That was impressive. I'll give you that. Half a point to you.
Let's hear your big announcer voice.
Like I said, I didn't get a chance to practice.
That's okay.
To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take the arms against a sea of troubles, and by opposing in them, to die, to sleep no more.
I like that. All right, let's see.
First time ever. First time reading. Really, I didn't read any Shakespeare in high school. That's why I got kicked out of English.
Because you're like, I refuse. Give me Shatner.
Yes. Nice. Now I gotta say that's Barry's voice. I kind of read that in Barry's voice a little bit. He's a little bit. Do you remember the cartoon The Tick?
Yes. Patrick Warburton.
Imagine a little bit of him and Barry also.
That's the same guy who voices Joe Swanson on Family Guy. For anybody out there who. Still watches Family
really?
Guy. Yeah, Patrick Warburton, and he's done some like live action. Well, I'm pretty sure. No, wait. Gosh darn. No, because Patrick Warburton was the live action Tick.
Oh, okay.
That's what it was. That's my mistake. I got confused.
See, so. I picture the guy who played what was his name, Cuddy or whatever on Seinfeld, Elaine's boyfriend.
Okay,
what was his name?
I don't know. I didn't watch much Seinfeld.
What?
I know.
Okay, that's another conversation another time. we're on your part now, but soft, what light. You may continue.
Well, now I've got to find out who did the voice. See?
Oh, no. An OCD radio host.
This is where I'm at. And for the Tick, it was Townsend Coleman did awesome. The voice of the Tick on.
I don't know him, but I like him.
Fair enough. All right, so here we go. Romeo steps into the garden.
Here, I can do that part for you.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
You got to go straight into your line. Stage left. Romeo enters the garden.
But soft, what light through yonder window breaks? It is the east, and Juliet is the sun. Arise, fair sun, and kill the envious moon, who is already sick and pale with grief, that thou, her maid, art far more fair than she.
That doesn't even sound like real English.
Thank you. Thank you.
No, I'm reading it. I'm like, that felt like I've got some verbs and nouns out of place.
Hey, I copied and pasted this straight from the internet. And
I believe you.
If there's one thing I know, is that the internet never lies.
That's correct.
Okay. Yes. Now for the fun one, and this is just a bit selfish on my part because I love this poem. So, of course, by loving the poem, I'm going to do a complete injustice by butchering it. We're just going to alternate these four stanzas and make all the Robert Frost enthusiasts hellaciously mad. But do you want to start or do you want to end?
Well, if you really believe you have Robert Frost enthusiasts listening to Nerds United, you may have more problems than you know about.
In that case, you start and I'll finish.
You want me to start?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. And I haven't read this in forever because I'm not a Portrait Geek. Maybe you know what? I'm going to read in the voice of Barry.
Oh, okay. I'll read in the voice of me, I guess.
Sober you or drunk you?
No, this is water.
You can read in any voice you want.
Well, I'll read in the voice that I would be actually announcing when I was on radio. I'll read in that voice.
Okay.
So shoulders back, chest out, get ready to enunciate.
Yes, I've got shoulders back, gut out. So
fair
two
enough.
Roads. Two roads diverged on a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth.
Then took the other as just as fair and having perhaps the better claim, because it was grassy and wanted wear, though as for that the passing there had worn them really about the same.
And both that morning equally lay, in leaves no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day, yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back.
I shall be telling this with a sigh somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference.
The end.
And you got one of the things I remember from radio school is you got to smile. They can hear the smile.
Oh, they can?
So that's what they said. I don't know.
The end.
That was good. Ross, it's been a great time having you on the show, man. I'm so glad that you were able to take some time and visit with me and talk not just about Barry versus the Apocalypse, which, by the way, you can support on Kickstarter just by going to Kickstarter.com, searching for Barry versus the Apocalypse, but also about you, about all the random crap we talked about, Arrested Development, Justified, so on and so forth. Elmore Leonard, C.S. Lewis. So much content packed into this conversation that it is going to be epic for the listeners to enjoy. If they've made it this far, they deserve a piece of candy.
I want to plug one thing. The actual website for the book is barryverses.com, and you can do verses or VS. It doesn't matter. I bought both just in case there was a dick out there who wanted to buy the other one. And
you mean like that jerk out there with Jittery Monkey on Twitter, but it's and makes us have to use Jittery Monkey MUNKEY on Twitter? That's a bunch
really?
Of crap, yeah.
Oh, that sucks.
And what's hilarious, and by that I mean pathetic, is that the guy has three tweets and he hasn't done anything with it in 2.5 years.
Oh.
And he won't respond to my tweets about it.
Yeah.
But I'm not bitter. That's like high school.
Not bitter. Not bitter at all.
Lots of counseling.
Yes, barryverses.com. And there was something else I was going to say, but I don't remember. If I had another beer, maybe.
To get back into the mental state
remember.
That you had.
There was a segue. I don't remember where I was going.
You have a segue? That's awesome.
I wish. That would be cool.
You know who else had a segue? Unrelated completely, but it's the only one that comes to mind, is Paul Blart.
Oh, yeah, Mall Cop. See, segue to me, the character on Arrested Development, it's Michael's brother. I cannot remember his name.
Is it Will Arnett's character?
Will Arnett's character, yeah.
I can't Job. Remember his name. Yes, yes.
But I think Barry versus the Apocalypse would definitely appeal to comic book readers just because I talk about a lot of other superheroes in there, and I poke fun at them, and that's not something you see done anywhere. No superhero gets fun poked at them. But
Deadpool.
Yeah. Say again.
Deadpool. Deadpool. He's the butt of his own jokes.
I don't know that one. I'm not. And see, I'm out of my element because I'm not a comic book aficionado.
That's all right. We've already sold Barry vs. the Apocalypse. We already sent him to Kickstarter. Yeah. So everything after this is gravy, in my opinion.
There you go. Gravy. Now I know what I'm having for dinner.
I'm having whatever we're having at my niece's birthday party. So
I hear you.
So, Ross, once again, I want to thank you very much for joining me, Nerds United, on episode 35, and look for much success and fantastic updates from the Kickstarter campaign in the next few weeks. BarryVerses.com, Barry, spell out Versus, or Barry VS. Where can they you got a Facebook page they can like or a Twitter that they can follow?
Yep, Ross Cavins is the Twitter handle. And I do have a Facebook page. If you search for Ross Cavins Likes You Too, then that's that page. I don't really do too much on that page because Facebook has been doing all kinds of fun stuff with not – if you post stuff on there, it doesn't really get out to the people who spend all that time liking your page, which kind of sucks. But if you're truly interested, I've got a newsletter sign up on BarryVerses.com, and I try to keep people a little up to date with what's happening without actually spamming them. And I keep it fun. That's one thing I will say. I post a lot of things on Twitter, some Barry Versus related, and a lot of things. Like, I threw out a pair of shoes the other day, so I took a picture of them.
Were those running shoes, old running shoes?
They were. Well, I don't really run anymore. They were waddling shoes. No, I'm not that huge. They were just – I'm a pack rat. I hang on to things, and if they're not completely falling apart, I don't get rid of them. And those shoes were falling apart, so
completely.
They were – yes. If you go to Twitter, you'll see.
So follow Ross on Twitter. Ross Cavins Likes You? Is that
– Yeah, Ross Cavins Likes You Too.
Likes You Too.
Is the Facebook page.
On Facebook.
RossCavins.com is, of course, the .com.
And BarryVS.com or BarryVerses.com. And as Ross said, yeah, Facebook doing crazy things. So even if you like the Facebook page, Nerds United, head on over there once, twice a week just to see what I'm posting if you're not seeing it in your newsfeed. Or you can follow Nerds United Show on Twitter. Big thanks once again to Ross Cavins. Go support his Kickstarter campaign, Barry Versus the Apocalypse. And we will catch you next time. Looking to meet with another one of my podcasting buddies, Mr. Matt Horst. I should probably get on contacting him and setting that up if I'm guaranteeing that he's going to be on the next show. But that's just the crazy lives that we leave here in Southern Illinois. Once again, thanks to Ross. And thank you, Ross, for spending some time with me. And you've got a basketball game to watch, so I'm going to let you get on it. And a couple more beers, and I'm going to go celebrate my niece's third birthday. So it's a win all around, unless your team lost, and I don't know that. So
yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. Fingers crossed. That's Ross Cavins. I'm Greg Mahochko. This is Nerds United, episode 35 on the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. We'll see you on down the road.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.